probably in their presentation will ask them to also make an inference in terms of the current challenges that the continent is facing, and particularly ourselves, because the issue of xenophobia and foreign nationals is not only exclusive to South Africa's challenge. A number of countries in the continent are facing the movement of people within the continent. Whether you classify them as refugees, asylum seekers, migrants, whatever you classify them, but there is a continuous movement of people within the continent. And whether these institutions of the African Union have the capacity to actually deal with this movement of people, and how then do we respond to challenges that this movement present to individual governments, and whether they will be at some point an ability of the union to respond as a union, as a community, or is it the responsibility of individual government to formulate isolated responses to challenges that are basically continental challenges. And what can we learn from other institutions in terms of their evolution to become what they are? Dr. Maluka, Ade, we are on your hands.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members and colleagues, and thank you for inviting us here to share with you some of our thoughts on some of these issues. And I'm also grateful that you also gave me the opportunity to be here with my friend that I have not seen in a couple of months, Ade, and their excellent book, which I was fortunate to get it for free today. It's on sale. I was actually meaning to buy it. Wanted to buy it. Actually, I saw it even in a second-hand bookshop. So I was worried that I hope it will still be there when I come back. But nonetheless, we have not structured our presentations with Ade as a team. So I think what I will try to do, and I'm sure Ade will explain how he intends to proceed with his presentation. But what I intend to do in my presentation, Mr. Chairman, is to try to give you a sense of the audit report that you have before yourself. But I will not go into the details of the report because you have it available. I have made it available to yourself. And I also try to propose to your context and some of the issues which I will suggest towards the end of my presentation with respect to what you yourself as a committee may consider doing. And I must also say that I'm here in my private capacity. I was part of this audit report, so I'm not representing anybody. And initially, Mr. Chairman, you remember that when you invited us, I was supposed to come with the Dr. Jinwala, who was also part of this panel. But because of her other engagements, she was unable to do so. And you insisted that I should be here myself. And I'm here in that capacity, really, as somebody who contributed to this exercise. So I'm here. I'm not representing anybody, and I'm not speaking on behalf of anybody. Mr. Chairman, let me also say that I also took the liberty to include in your package two additional documents in addition to the audit review. Is the report of the Committee of 12 Heads of State of Heads of State, which was charged with the responsibility of looking at the way forward on matters relating to the Union Government, which met recently. I think towards the end of May in Arusha, and also the report of the 11th Extraordinary Session of the Executive Council, which met early May, also in Arusha, which was mandated by the summit of the African Union at the beginning of the year, to look at the audit report, all the recommendations. So I'll be using some of this documentation as my reference in the course of my presentation. But let me just quickly say, Mr. Chairman, that the report was an input towards strengthening the ongoing exchange on the continent on the issue of the union government. For the past 3 years, we've been talking about the union government And there are three main approaches currently. One approach says we should have this union government. Let me say that there is a distinction between union government and the United States of Africa. Union government is supposed to be, for those who are familiar with the Marxist literature, more like socialism as a stage towards communism. So union government will be equivalent to your socialism, and United States of Africa will be the equivalent of your communism. So it's more like a transitional stage towards the United States of Africa. So it's within that context. So there are three approaches. And the first approach is you have member states on the continent who are saying we want this union government now, and actually if we can have it in the afternoon, we should have it. And then you have the second school of thought, which says that we don't think it's feasible to have it now. Let's rather use our existing strength, notably the RECs, the regional economic communities, and nation states. So let's use the existing capacities and gradually grow for and try to work towards this union government based on where they are and so on. And then the third one, of course, there are those who are saying that, okay, some of us who are ready should be allowed to move. So should be allowed to, if country A and country B think that they are ready to move and to federate into some sort of a union of some sort, they should be allowed to do so. So this has been really the debate and among leaders and member states and so on. And there was then, as a result of this, a number of responses to how you could proceed with this debate. The first one, of course, not necessarily in that order. The first was, of course, to set up a number of committees at high level, head of state level, committees to investigate the matter further. The first committee, of course, was chaired by President Museveni, and when it reported on its work, the mandate was given to a new committee chaired by President Obasanjo. And President Obasanjo, you'll recall, he then even convened in Abuja during that period a high-level seminar to look at this matter. And it is at that seminar where then there was an idea which emerged, which later became a decision of the union, to establish, to develop a roadmap towards the union government. And that's really the second set of deliverables. So the first response was really this committee which was set up, President Museveni, then the President of Obasanjo. Then the second response was then to set up a technical team to develop a roadmap. And that technical team worked under the leadership of President Obasanjo and was to report in Banjul. And when it reported in Banjul, then some of the issues that came out of there then led to the third response, which was to organize a grand debate in Ghana at the summit. I think it was last year, July. Mm-hmm. Last year, July. The last year summit in July in Ghana, which was focused on the grand debate on the union government. At that summit, and one of the things that came out was, of course, then to conduct an audit of the union, to say, if we want to move towards this union government, what is our capacity on the ground? Then the decision was taken that, yes, we have taken note of this technical study, the roadmap, and so on, but let's look at the capacity of the union. So that's where the whole idea of conducting an audit of the African Union came about. And at that time, the idea was to establish some sort of a technical audit team of consultants. And when the chairperson of the union at that time, President Kufur, thought about this matter further, he felt that he needed a credible team of Pan-Africanists, renowned Pan-Africanists, and constituted them, led by one of the renowned Africans, Professor Adibaye Adedeji. And then, of course, Dr. Jinwala was part of it, and quite a number of people on the continent. And then I served in the resource team. And we worked in Addis Ababa for about 3 months or so to produce this report that you have before yourself. But before I go into the report, let me just say, and I'm sure Ade will probably want to reflect on this matter further, but just to quickly recall some of the steps that we really brought us to where we are today as a continent. You remember that the idea of union government was discussed in the 1960s, and I think it's associated largely with the former president of Ghana, Kwame Nkrumah, talking about union government at that time. And then it was in the context of two things. One, the the debate that was taking place on the continent at that time around the future of colonial borders, to say, do we respect them, do we recognize and respect these colonial borders, or we constitute ourselves into a federated entity of some sort? And then the second, of course, issue that was deeply debated related to processes leading to the formation of the Organization of African Unity in 1963, May 25, 1960. So those were some of the debates in the 1960s. And then, of course, then towards, from the middle of 1960s, so we have, even Nkrumah himself is toppled in 1966, then the continent degenerates into all sorts of juntas, et cetera, et cetera. And you could say that the debate fizzled out. And then it resurfaced somehow from the middle of the 1970s, and thanks to the efforts of, and I must say, Professor Dedeji himself, and when people started talking about regional integration, but in a different context, not in the context of the Union government. That's how then the debate resurfaced from the middle of the 1970s and culminating in 1980 in the adoption of what became known as the Lagos Plan of Action and its Acts of Lagos. Acts of Lagos is more like an annexure to the Lagos Plan of Action. And you can say that the Lagos Plan doctrine was comprised, there will be a lot of other things, but I want to isolate four elements. One was that it tried to conceptualize and put forward a regional integration agenda to say we should set up at sub-regional level some sort of regional economic communities. And where they exist, we should try to strengthen them and so on and so on. And at that time, the ECOWAS, which was established in 1975, was in existence. And then out of that Lagos Plan agenda, quite a number of regional bodies, COMESA, were to be established, SADC itself, even though SADC was established. But it was also informed by that agenda. At that time, it was the SADCCC, I think, and so on. So the regional integration issues came up, and it became a continental program. These regional economic communities were meant to be, and this is the second point that came out of the Lagos Plan agenda, especially in the final act of Lagos. The intention was that out of this, then we'll move in the period of in three phases by 2000 to establish an African economic community. So in terms of the final act of Lagos, by 2000, we're supposed to have established an African economic community. So that's the second issue. The third one, of course, the Lagos Plan doctrine was also built around a concept which still is still relevant and is quite dominant today, of self-reliance. To say that we need to organize ourselves economically on self-reliant basis. Self-reliance, not autarchy, and it's very clear in the document, but that we should really build our continent on the basis of the resources that we have, the resources we mobilize domestically, and what we get from outside should be complementary, not the starting point. And then the fourth leg of the Lagos Plan doctrine, of course, was the sectoral focus in agriculture, in industry, and so on. But we know it did not happen. We didn't have 2000 came, and in fact, the year 2000 came, but by then, we didn't have the African Economic Community. But there were quite a number of things that, of course, we can attribute as factors that led to, you could say, partly to the failure of the Lagos Plan agenda. One was the Cold War context, of course, which affected unity on the continent. We're fighting among ourselves, taking sides in the Cold War battles. The second one is of course the character of the African post-colonial state, the extent to which our leaders were oriented towards saving their continent and their people and their own countries and so on. And then the third one, of course, was that in the 80s, the World Bank introduced and the IMF introduced what became known as the structural adjustment programs. You know, they were highly debated and they became a failure. They led to massive destruction on the continent of our economies. But what it meant basically is that the tools of decision-making that states have were taken away from them, because economic policy-making was taken away from actors on the continent and auctioned out to, you could say, to external players. So economic policy decisions and targets and so on were set by structural architects of the structural adjustment program. And then the second thing related to that is, of course, that development was thrown out of the window and developmentalism and replaced with adjustment. So So there was more focus on macroeconomic stability and so on, and development faded away. It never became an issue, whereas development was at the center of the doctrine of the Lagos Plan. And then, of course, the people were excluded. That's the most important thing. And then, of course, the 1980s, as you know, was a period of serious economic crisis for the continent. So that's really, you could say, the Lagos Plan phase in the 1980s and so on. The third phase, you can say, is the what I want to call the Abuja Treaty phase, where there was an attempt by leaders to try to resurrect the Lagos Plan of Action agenda, that is the drive towards the African Economic Community, and then this took the form of the adoption and then, of course, and then the entry into force of the treaty, which became known as the Abuja Treaty, and which was intended to establish an African Economic Community, and unlike the Lagos Plan of the final act of Lagos, not in three stages, but this time in six stages, and it was, I think, supposed to happen in 2034 or something like that, or 2024. So it was to be in six stages, and you can look at that. It's quite a thick document. The Lagos Plan of Action is also quite thick, but the final act it's quite small. So that's happened. Until then, that's the fourth phase. Until the extraordinary meeting of the OAU in 1999, which was convened in Libya and Sirte, where the leaders then decided, they realized it was out of course, a reassessment, but also because of the ongoing exercise within the OAU at that time to review the charter of the OAU. And then a view then prevailed at that time that they must revisit the stages that are in the Abuja Treaty. And then instead, because in terms of the Abuja Treaty, the Pan-African Parliament was, for example, was to be established in the last phase. And then they decided then to establish what became known as the African Union. And the African Union was then supposed to, because the Lagos Plan of Action, the Abuja Treaty was built around an economic model of integration. And then now the African Union then came to build on a politically driven model of integration to say, let's use our strength, this institution, let's establish them now. And as you know, everything is now history. And currently, which is the fifth stage, we are now talking of the Union government. So that's really roughly, really, Mr. Chairman, an overview of where we are and how we came to be where we are today. And then as to the overview of the audit report, I won't go into detail. I'll probably go into elements of it when I refer to the report of the ministers. The report, it's in four parts. You know, there will probably be other parts, but I prefer maybe to put it in not in four parts, in three parts, really, for the purpose of this discussion today. The first part, really, it's more like the contextual and the introductory segment of the document. So in that part, we are talking about where we come from. We say looking back to look forward. We're talking about we're talking about the African, the OAU, where we come from, the achievements of the OAU, and then the values that inspired us to be where we are, and so on. So these are more like the contextual and the history part of this exercise. The second part, which is really the meat of the document, it's where we assess the document, the exercise, and assesses in some great detail the organs, all the organs of the African Union that are in it, even the ones that are supposed to be established, institutions, NEPAD, and also we look at the regional economic communities, relations between the African Union, the Economic Commission for Africa, the United Nations Commission for Africa, and the African Development Bank. So, and then we also, as part of this exercise, look at the missions of the AU in Brussels, in New York, and so on. And then in that exercise, for example, around the organs, even the institutions, we look at their programs, we look at their structure, and we then say to what extent have they delivered. Are they delivering? Are they working? Are they functioning? And then we also then look at the financing of some of these institutions and so on, where possible. In fact, most of the time we try to look at their sustainability financially. So that's really the second part of the report. The third part of the report really is comprised of two things. One, it's the recommendation, the 157 recommendations that we make. So under each, after our assessment in each section, then we try to say what are the recommendations. And so these recommendations, I think they're in total about 157, but the bulk of those recommendations are on the African Union Commission, which is based in Addis Ababa. So that's really one leg of the recommendation, of this part. The second part is really about what we call the accelerators, and I'll come to them. To say if this is our situation and we want to get to the Union government, what sort of accelerators we can use and the benchmarks. So this is something quite innovative that we do in the report, and then I'll come back to that. Mr. Chairman, I'm not going very fast. No? I want to make sure that there is enough time for the discussion.